Yo, what's up, guys? New episode of Badass Asian Dudes with an unbelievable life story of a guy who went from an accounting job to working with martial art legends Jackie Chan and Jet Li. This is an interview with my friend Alfred. Alfred is currently an actor and stuntman in Hollywood. He's the first American to win a gold medal at the World Wushu Championships. Wushu is a Chinese martial art that has thousands of years of history in Asia. After winning the gold medal, Alfred got a crazy job living, working, and traveling with Jet Li, where he got to be a part of Jet Li's daily life and meet celebrities and business leaders all over the world. Alfred actually lived in Jet Li's house. It doesn't stop there. After his time with Jet Li, Alfred made the hard decision to leave and join Jackie Chan's stunt team, where they worked on a movie together. But before all of that, Alfred was just a normal dude working at KPMG, one of the big four accounting firms, after graduating from UCLA. So how do you go from a normal accounting job to working with Jet Li and Jackie Chan? That's what we get into in the interview today, and it's a long, long journey that's really inspiring. In this episode, we go over a lot of things. His journey to becoming the first American to win the World Wushu Championships while working his accounting job. The struggles he faced when trying to decide if he should quit. How he got a job living, working, and traveling all over the world with Jet Li and meeting people like Bill Gates, Bill Clinton, Jack Ma, and other Chinese celebrities. The lessons he learned from Jet Li. Why he ultimately decided to leave his job with Jet Li and join Jackie Chan's stunt team, what Jackie Chan is like in person, some great stories of his times with Jackie Chan and Jet Li, and then we end with some overall lessons and thoughts he's learned in his life for achieving unbelievable things in your life. This was an awesome episode, and I think you guys will really enjoy it. Also, before we start, just please make sure to subscribe and share the episode. If you really enjoy it, please write a 5-star review. That would be so great. It helps other people find the podcast and helps me get other great guests on the show. Lastly, I have a Facebook group. Go on Facebook, search Badass Asian Dudes. If you want to network with other Asian dudes that are all networking and working towards their goals, becoming their best selves, whether that's health, wealth, entrepreneurship, anything. Check out the group and apply. We're almost at 1,000 people in the group, which is crazy. Thanks for listening, guys, and here's the show. So, Alfred, what's going on? What are you up to these days?
It's happening.
This is happening.
Oh wow! Awesome, awesome.
What are you working on?
I haven't talked to you in a while, huh?
Yes.
What am I working on? I'm working on a number of things, mainly focused in the entertainment, stunt coordinating, action directing, a little bit of on and off camera work, but all surrounding the entertainment space. And I think it's a really exciting time for people in entertainment, and also, of course, Asian and Asian Americans as well.
Yeah, for sure. Okay, so your story, your life story, I think it's very, very unique, you know, because I think I heard that you used to work in accounting, like right after you graduated from college, you used to work in accounting, and then you won the Wushu Championship, and then from there. So, like, can you go into like the whole story of how you got started?
Sure. Yeah. I grew up in the Bay Area in California. And then I actually went to school at UCLA, which is how I met Glenn, who was my roommate, which is kind of how we all got connected.
I interviewed Glenn last week.
Oh, awesome. He was my roommate. So for me, like the path was always, you know, kind of in a Asian American, Asian culture, just to go to a good college, you know, get the job, which is what I did. So I kind of put it all out there. Like I really wanted to make it into UCLA, which I did. I studied economics, and straight out of college, I got a job working at KPMG, and I worked there for about 2 years. And simultaneously, I was still training martial arts, which was just a passion of mine, something that I just enjoyed doing. It just something that resonated with me. After KPMG, I also worked at City National Bank for like a year and a half or so. So all in, I was working for like 3.5 years or so. in the IT audit space. So yeah, essentially, you know, accounting, auditing, consulting.
How was that? Was that fun? That doesn't sound fun.
Well, you know, okay, like I hear that people do
IT
say
IT audit. I don't know. I don't know about that.
People do say like auditing is like, I don't know, either I've heard or I've seen some statistics that it's definitely like a more boring job. But to be honest, you know, at least it was fresh out of college. It was actually exciting in the sense, you know, you get to travel to different clients, you know, you're meeting with different people and you always have different teams because sometimes you're, yeah, you're at a different client site. And so there's just different companies that you're getting to like learn about. So, you know, I'm not hating on it. I think in that sense, it was like, it was interesting, but it's just like, it wasn't for me though. You know,
got it. Okay. And KPMG, that's a great company. So, and then also you got into a great school, UCLA, KPMG, you must have studied hard.
Exactly. I feel like the hardest I studied was probably in high school to get into college. And from there, yeah, Glenn can tell you some stories, but.
Okay, so during this time, have you been doing Wushu ever since you were a little kid? Or like, is that something that you started getting into later on in your life?
Okay, so I started to do Wushu in high school. So by some accounts, like compared to, you know, starting at like 6 or 7, that's a little bit late in the game. But by other accounts, I mean, starting in high school is still definitely early enough, you know, for me to develop a good foundation. I think what it was for me is like, it just for sports, you know, I casually, you know, I like basketball. I like, you know, just being athletic and being outdoors and stuff. But most sports, like I was kind of whack at like a lot of sports or like average, you know what I mean? But when I connected with Wushu or just martial arts in general, that was something that I excelled at, you know, I understood it. I really enjoyed it. I also watched a lot of martial arts movies as a kid. So just all of that, it was like, it just suited my body type and my, you know, just it was something that I really gravitated towards. So in a short amount of time, I was training, picking things up really quickly. And then, you know, kind of at my first competition in like the intermediate category or for my age range, you know, I was winning gold medals and, you know, on local circuits and local tournaments. So I started to excel in that really quickly. And then I think the fact that I was good at it also was like a stimulus for me to continue being better at it. And so, yeah, I moved up to like a high level relatively quickly compared to like when I started.
How'd you even choose Wushu? I had never even heard of Wushu before I had met you.
Yeah. Well, Wushu was definitely a lesser known martial arts. You know, Taekwondo and Karate were popular martial arts. And, you know, I grew up in the Bay Area and there really wasn't that many Wushu schools. So I had gone to a few karate and Taekwondo classes just here and there. But for some reason at that time, I was like, it didn't really resonate with me. And it's because I watched too many Jackie Chan and Jet Li movies. And, you know, Jet Li, his main style is Wushu. He was a China national champion. And I watched these movies like Tai Chi Master, Once Upon a Time in China. And of course, like Jackie Chan, he had a lot of dope movies like Drunken Master 1 and 2. And, you know, a lot of the stunt people and a lot of the styles were heavily influenced by Wushu. So I didn't even know what it was. But once I saw it, I knew that was something that I had to learn. And so in high school, there was some kind of like international day where they had different booths of like Southeast Asian food, oh, yeah. Indian food, and all these different things at my school. And included in that, they had, I believe, like, you know, taiko drums, or they just had like different cultural dancing of all different backgrounds. And one of the events that they had just as like an international showcase was martial arts. So people were performing like, you know, breaking bricks, and they were doing katas and forms and all this stuff. And one of my classmates, she was in my French class, she had done karate and wushu. So she did this form and suddenly she was doing this like flurry of movements. And when I saw it, I was like, oh my God, that's what I've seen in all these movies. That's what I think looks super cool. So after she performed, I asked her like, hey, where are you training? And she directed me to like this wushu school, which was, there was very few, you know, at the time when I started, it was like, you know, in the late 90s, I believe is when I started. And, there just wasn't that many places. So she finally directed me to this place. I went there, they gave me like a trial class, and I was like, all right, sign me up. You know, it's just something that I knew I loved from the start.
Damn, that's awesome. I think that's cool that you found something that you're very passionate about at such an early age. I mean, high school is, I feel like that's still very, very early, you know, even though you said that there's probably some other wushu people that started way earlier than that. But I feel like high school, that's still quite early to find your passion. And then you also talked about Jet Li and Jackie Chan. Just reading from your bio, I read that you have worked with them. And so I'm very excited to talk to you about that. But before we go into that, so you start wushu in high school. And yep. In order to get to the championships of wushu or get the gold medal of wushu, you have to have quite a high mastery of that. So as soon as you get into the wushu school, do you start just practicing wushu every day, all day long?
I mean, I still had, you know, I was a student, obviously, so I still had all the just the basic requirements of, you know, work, and, you know, or sorry, school, homework, you know, extracurriculars. I did like, you know, I was doing all this other stuff, you know, like cross country, speech and debate, like pretty much I just like piled on like as much stuff as I could, you know. But yeah, wushu was the one that I kind of enjoyed the most. So it was almost, it wasn't like I was working. It was just like it was like my outlet and something that I really enjoyed. So yeah, I put in a lot of hours, and that's how I got to like an above average or kind of like 70th percentile level in a relatively short amount of time, like after a couple of years, you know. But I think what made the difference, so let me see it. Let me try to draw, tell you the story. So basically I went to college, and during college, you know, there's a lot of distractions. So I kind of,
parties.
Yeah. I went out and I was, I joined a business fraternity and all these things, but
AKSI.
Exactly.
Got it.
Yeah. But anyways, so in 2003, I had like my biggest goal at the time was to make the US wushu team, like the national team. It's the equivalent of like the Olympic team, or like, you know, just making like the national team in that sport, you know? And that was like my biggest goal for the longest time. And, in 2003, you know, I was already a top tier athlete. I wouldn't say I'm number one, but I was just a high level athlete. And I put a lot of kind of hope and pressure into myself to make it on the US team. And I felt, you know, you could say this and that, but there was some politics, there were some obstacles, and there was just a lot of, you know, stuff. And I didn't make it. So I was kind of like let down by the system. And I was like, you know, I was just kind of disappointed and had almost given up on it. And then so combined with, that was kind of like right when I entered college, roughly. And so combined with just AKSI and school, obviously social life, all these things, I had kind of, I don't know, just like I put it on the back burner. And it was 2 years later, one of my UCLA wushu, so I helped start up the UCLA wushu club at school. And there was one of my teammates, Tiffany Reyes. She was a little bit older than me, but she had literally started wushu in college. So when I got to college, she was older than me, but she was, you know, I already was at a higher level. So I was showing her some things and helping her out. Obviously she was also a dedicated, you know, competitor. But anyways, in the 2 years that I was kind of like not really focusing on wushu, she came to visit, cause she had already graduated. She came to visit and I was like just catching up with her, like, how's it going? And then she was like, so, when are you coming back to wushu? And I was like, what are you talking about? Like I've been doing wushu my whole life and it's like something I do. And she's like, oh, okay. Cause you haven't really like competed. And then I really took a moment and I thought about it. And I was like, oh my God, you're right. Like the 2005 US team trials, I didn't attend that. A lot of the bigger tournaments, which there's like a Berkeley wushu tournament, I didn't attend it. And I kind of was like, oh wow, I've really been off the map for like 2 years, you know? And she actually made the US wushu team in a shorter amount of time than like I had been training. And I was like, you know, I had a couple years on her by the time she just started, and she put in so much dedication and work and she made the team. So kind of like proving that it could be done, you know, despite like when you start and despite all these things, you know? So I kind of like was jolted awake and I was like that fire to like compete came back. And so I was like, okay, you know what? I'm going, like, I gotta do this thing. And so fast forward to 2000, because the team trials is every 2 years. So fast forward to 2007, which was the next team trials. I was already working at KPMG, and I actually made a really bold move because it was like my first year, or maybe like moving on to year two at KPMG. And I requested a leave of absence, or like a sabbatical or whatever, which is completely, if you know from just, I know
you have been a hard decision. That must have been a very, yeah. very hard decision. Leaving your stable job and then
So I didn't quit my job, but I basically requested a leave of absence, which, like I said, was a bold move, because in your first year, if people with a corporate background know that, like, you don't request something like that. It makes you look not serious about your work,
And also, you're such a recent hire.
Exactly. And it's kind of a bold thing. Like, who are you to kind of like ask this of us? So for me, I wasn't really necessarily asking for a leave of absence. Like, I was going into it, like, I was really nervous, kind of talking to my manager and stuff about this, because essentially I was, fearing that they're gonna be like, okay, well, if you want to take a leave of absence, just leave permanently, So I had gone in with, I kind of made the decision. It was a hard decision, but I was like, okay, I'm just so competitive that I was like, I need to focus and get, cause like there is a lifespan, there is a kind of an age limit for Wushu, like not by the laws of it, or, not by the rules of it, but just your body. It's kind of like there's an optimal age where you can compete at a high level, just like gymnastics or any, athletic endeavor. And so I made this tough decision. And I said, I'd like to request a leave of absence.
How about your parents at this point? Did you ask them about, or did you talk to them about the sabbatical, and what were their thoughts? Or did you just make the decision on your own?
No, I mean, I had definitely been, I definitely spoke to them on the phone, but I guess I started off like, ever since I started my job, I was kind of, my dad was at a certain age already, and he was like always mentioning, he's like, oh, my dad was an electrical and computer engineer, and he put in his time, and he worked really hard, but he would always be like, oh, I can't wait till I retire. So we'd kind of have this running joke where, even though it was only my first year at work, I would be like, oh, I just put in 60, 65 hours of work. Like, I can't wait till I retire. I can't wait till I retire. So like, I was kind of like just joking about it. And I was like, and I would just go extreme, but like more of like sarcastically being like, yeah, they're like, I'm going to do Wushu, like, or like, I don't know. I can't keep doing this. Like, it's too rough. Me and you, dad, we should both like retire. And like, and so I had kept that kind of as a running thing. And, but they knew that, I was still interested in Wushu, and there was a passion of mine. And then, yeah, then, as I, even amongst the joking, I was kind of saying like questioning if auditing was something that I wanted to do as a lifelong pursuit. It was a great thing, out of college, met some great people and learned a lot, but still it was like something I was wondering if I would continue to do. So
if you were wondering what you were going to do for your lifetime and it wasn't going to be auditing, were you thinking that martial arts was going to be your lifetime pursuit, or what were your other options that you were thinking about for your lifetime?
Well, okay. So here's the thing, and this might be helpful for other people, I did not know necessarily what my lifetime pursuit was, but after a certain point, and I can't put a number on it, but here's the thing. If you try a lot of things, especially, when you're younger, or just if you try a lot of things, you do know what you don't want to do. And so this was like, if you live on a day-to-day basis, it's really easy to just like keep doing what you're doing. And like, and for example, like I said, out of college, I made decent amount of money through, with KPMG, especially I was in the IT audit, which is even more of a niche kind of field. So, we were getting paid all right, especially for right out of college. And to think about giving that up, and that whole career path is a scary thing. But what was scarier was knowing that I did not necessarily want to do this. And I kind of multiplied out like, okay, I'm right out of college, but let's fast forward 10 years. Let's fast forward 20 years. Like, what is my future outcome? And the thing is, if I was going along the track that I was on, I could see the future outcome, which was basically I would make a higher salary. I would probably live in a slightly better place, whether it was like a home or a condo or whatever. I'd probably have a slightly nicer car, but essentially, you know, I'd eat at slightly nicer places, but, you know, essentially my lifestyle wouldn't change significantly. Like I would be exactly who I was 20 years later, still auditing or still doing, you know, that field of work, which was not
still
something
making the jokes, still making the jokes with your dad. Like, I can't wait to retire, like doing that thing. Yeah, exactly.
I would be living a linear standard path in my career. And that, again, in some ways, you know, people who are doing that, it's, if it's for them, like that's respectable and honorable. But then for me, especially if that's not something that I resonated with, I didn't want to live with regrets. And especially if you fast forward 20 years from now, and that's totally not what you want to be doing, and you're just incrementally living better, because if you think about the payoff, it's like, you know, you can kind of calculate how much you would make as a senior associate, as a manager, as a, you know, like those incremental 5%, 10%, even 20% pay increases are not really going to change my standard of living, you know, and I'm happy with, as long as I have a vehicle to get around, as long as I have, you know, food on, you can go to Costco and then make food. Like, I'm just saying, like, if you compare like the trade-off risk and reward, it was like, I saw where I would be 20 years, 30 years from now. And I was not in love with that. Now, the other hand, I had this like path where it was unknown. It could be worse or it could be better, but I was, because I knew the outcome, because one outcome was known and I did not want that outcome. The only practical choice, or the only possible choice to not have that outcome, was to jump into the abyss, you know? And if you jump into the abyss, then the potential is like limitless. And yes, there is risk. It could be worse. You could be more broke. You could, you know, have certain things, but
even the broke thing, I feel like it's not as bad as you think, because I feel like if this whole thing didn't work out, you could probably get your job back at KPMG or a different place.
Exactly. I could have, I very possibly could have, went to another firm, maybe either a lower tier firm, or just even a slight change of, like, instead of IT audit, maybe just audit, or maybe just IT related. So yeah, there were some other options, but at the time it definitely feels like it's like a do or die kind of move. It's like, I'm giving up this path.
But especially when you're so young, you know, like you feel like so everything is so dramatic.
Exactly. Exactly. Yeah. So yeah, I think that's what's big though. I think when people are afraid of taking a leap, it's like, look where you're at now. And is that where you want to be? You know, because like kind of time is like one of the most precious things. So if you just wade in that pool for like an extra 2 or 3 years, like time's going by, but what are you actually like gaining? You know, maybe some more income, but you're also spending money every year. So like, how much are you really like netting, you know?
Yeah. And then I agree with what you said. Time is so precious. That's your most precious resource. Okay. So you asked for the sabbatical, and then what happens next?
So I asked for the sabbatical, very blessed. They were, you know, they were for it, but they said, you know, yeah, this is like your, you know, we'll let you go, but obviously you got to focus on the, you know, do your thing, live once kind of thing. But you know, you come back, you got to really zero in and focus on your career, you know, if you want to stay with us and all that. And so, yeah, I mean, I sabbatical, I didn't make any money while I was on the leave of absence. Like it was unpaid. It was, the only thing was like, they would let me come back to work. That's all. But I wasn't going to get the standard pay increase. I was, compared to my peers, I was definitely going to be, it's kind of like you stay back a grade kind of thing. But anyways, I went out to China, which is kind of the origin and the roots of Wushu. So they have some of the best, they have the best athletes and the best training facilities. And I was, you know, going all in, all on my own dime out there training. I trained super hard.
That's exciting, dude. That's really exciting.
Yeah.
That's like a movie, you know, like this is like the new chapter of your life. You move to a new country and pursue your dreams. Like that's really exciting.
Well, no, it definitely was. I was kind of like, and just, you know, being free from my work that I was, you know, I was already there for like over a year, and I did this whole thing. I went to China. I trained. I prepared for the team trials, which was in 2007. And there was so much pressure. Like the night before, I could barely eat. I could barely drink water. Like I was just kind of like, you know, psyching myself out or whatever. And I competed. And in my first event, I totally like messed up. I totally screwed up. And I was out. I was out. Like,
wow.
Like the sabbatical, the money I spent out there in China, the training, like, you know, like some Rocky level shit where you're just like sweating it out.
This is a movie. This is like a movie.
I crashed and burned. And after I knew I messed up and I had no chance. I didn't make the team. I didn't know what to do. I just felt so like, you know, I felt so frustrated. I just left the kind of tournament site and I just walked outside and I just literally kept walking. I used to listen to music before I would like compete to kind of psych me up. So I had like a little MP3 player. I was walking. I just like chucked it on the street and then I kept walking. I literally walked for like over a mile. Like just mind was like blank. Like,
oh shit.
Kinda like, wow. Like I just did. You know, I put my career on the line. I went, you know, I did all this stuff and I was kind of like the whole time I was like, no, it's my destiny. Like I'm going to make the team. It's my destiny. It's my, you know, like just psyching myself in that I was going to make this and, I didn't make it. So I was kind of like, dude, this is not how the movie like is supposed to go. Like I'm supposed to, you know, make it and have like this happy ending. So I was just like tripping out and I just kept walking until I got really tired and I was like, where am I? Then I turned around, walked back. I looked through these bushes. I found the MP3 player still there. And then, and then I went back to my life and I kind of had like a round two of like this important decision making.
When you say you went back to your life, what do you mean you went back to your life? You went back to KPMG?
Yeah, I went back to KPMG. And, because I was leave of absence. They said, yeah, you can come back. And I was like, everyone was like, hey man, you know, good try. Like
How long was that period?
Oh, the leave of absence. I think it's been a while now. I think it was like, I want to say 3 to 4 months, like pretty much a summer, you know, cause I spent like 2 months training in China and then I had to come back to the US, acclimate, then compete at the actual tournament itself. And, there was a little bit of before and after time. So it was about 3 to 4 months. Yeah.
Yeah. So, okay. So you come back.
Yeah. I come back. I'm like behind my peers a little bit, but you know, I'm like this guy that they're like, oh, he just like left right when he got hired and now he's back. And you know, kind of thing. And again, my coworkers were really like my coworkers and managers. A lot of them were great. Like I really like the community and the vibe.
Yeah.
You know, but I went back to the grind. And then I don't know, you know, I was still mentally figuring out life and you know, all that stuff. But going back to what we said earlier, it's just like, I was doing the math and like, I was so blessed that like, I was still able to have a job to like come back to, but I was still like, is this for me? You know what I mean? Like just the whole, like thinking 20 years out, like, do I want to be, you know, even in the finance or corporate field, you know? So fast forward, I was able to change similar line of work, but I went to City National Bank, which is also a really good company and great people there. But the reason I went there was because I was more on the internal team. So I didn't have to travel as much. It was very much like a 9 to 5 hours. And I did that because I was like, I didn't want to give up. So I was like, I had kind of in that time period decided like, no, I need to go again. Like I've got like one last shot in me. Cause at that point I was like in my, you know, mid early 20s, which doesn't sound that old, but just for Wushu, peaking is like kind of, you know, in the early 20s is peaking, you know, and plus like you got career, you got other things to focus on. So I was like, I can afford like one last shot at this. And it's another 2 years dedication, 2007 to 2009, you know?
Oh shit.
So I was, 2 years, you know, it's not short. It's not super long, but it's still like 2 whole years of your life, you know?
Yeah.
And I was like, all right, I'm going to try this. I'm going to do this again. Like I have like stubborn sometimes, you know, and, just have like, sometimes I just hyper focus on something. And so, yeah, it was almost in that, like, yeah, it just, my hyper focus for like those 10, 8 or 9, 10 years, whatever, was making the team. Like that was it, you know? So, you know, now even in my job interview for City National Bank, I was like, the reason I want to come here from KPMG is I want a little bit more of a routine schedule. And what's important to me is not like career advancement, but just getting my job done, doing a good job, but having the schedule to train, you know, to train in my martial arts. And I kind of told them my background, you know, I was highly ranked U.S. martial artist, but I want to make the team and I want to compete at the world championships and all that. And they respected that. They're like, yeah, I mean, as long as you get your job done, that's cool, you know? And so I would train in the mornings, not every morning, but especially as I got closer to competition, I would train at like 6 a.m. Then I'd go to work. And then after work, I would train again.
So there's a wushu gym or that you would go to, or you would train at home, or what'd you do?
Yeah, I mean, there was a bunch of places. Like in the mornings, it was more of just like a workout, or there was like kind of a parking lot or an empty space that I would just kind of, you know, train, maintain my fitness. And then, yeah, at night or in the evenings, I was training at, there was a few places, but sometimes, yeah, the gym, but also a place in Orange County. So I was training down there. It was, yeah, Southern California Wushu Academy. And, I was like a wushu nomad. I did go from like various places. There was a coach I had, Li Jing. She has a school kind of, back then it was like closer to Chinatown, but now she has a school near Temple City. But anyways, yeah. You know, I was okay. training yeah, a
this
lot.
This is like a movie. This is,
yes. Yeah. This is like a movie. Like, yeah. It's like I had my crash and burn and, yes. So I was back at it. I'll try to fast forward now to, so basically like the U.S. team trials is getting closer. I'm still at City National Bank, and you know how every team trials is 2 years. So I'd been there for like over a year now as well. And I was getting better and better. And at this point, you know, the running joke of like, I'm going to like retire and I want to do this and that with my parents was like still going, you know? And so this was a crazy thing. So I was once again put at this like crossroads, you know, where, you know, kind of like what do I do thing. And so I was, but luckily, you know, this job, they were more, I wouldn't say flexible with me, just it was more routine. So I had a better schedule. And so I was training and, you know, my parents were supportive of it, but they were still in the mentality of like, okay, well, you know, he's got a stable job. Just like, they're kind of like, yeah, you're getting old. Why are you still doing this wushu thing? But whatever, like, you know, as long as you can pay your bills, like that's fine.
Yeah.
So here's the crazy thing. You know, I was training and what happened? Let's see. I had booked my mom started to like help me because I was also learning like Tai Chi, which is like another event. I was just like doing everything in wushu possible to like make the team and all this stuff. And I was just training all these different styles and just like really like elevating my training. So sometimes I would even fly up north to the Bay Area, which is, you know, where my parents are and there's schools out there. I would fly up north on the weekend to receive training from some like, you know, like former Chinese national champions. And I was just like doing all this stuff. And so basically after all the work I put in, everything kind of lined up, I made the US wushu team. So yeah, so I competed at the team trials, which this year was held actually in California. So I didn't even have, normally like they hold it on the East Coast, but this year it was held on the West Coast. Like just all these things lined up, and I won't go super into it, but even at the competition itself, like they like announced the scores or whatever. And like, I didn't make it, but then they like made a mistake. They announced the scores where I was like, oh shit, again, I didn't make it. And I was like internally crying. And I walked outside, I did this little mini walk, not a mile walk, but I kind of like just walked around the block a little bit. When I got back in, there's all these people like whispering and like chattering and stuff. And I was like, oh, like, cause I missed stuff, you know, as I was gone for like 10 minutes, I came back and they're like, oh, that previous score they announced was off. Like they made a mistake in the tally or like the ballots or whatever it was, in the scoring. And so I was still a number one contender. So, and then long story short, at the very end, I was like holding my breath to the end. But they announced who made the team and I made the US team.
Wow. Wow. That must have been an amazing feeling.
That was definitely, yeah, it's like, it was cathartic for sure. I mean, I was like, it was almost, even after it had happened, I just was like I didn't have this excited. I was happy, but I didn't have necessarily like a super happy face, because I was just kind of like waiting for any moment where it was like, oh, that's a mistake. Or like, I was just so nervous about it, you know, and pinching myself, like, is this real kind of thing, you know? But so the story kind of, well, yeah, it doesn't end there. Like, it kind of only gets crazier, really.
No, I this is why I wanted you on the podcast, because I want to hear this story.
Okay, so now I made the U.S. team. It's kind of like, woo, like that's kind of.
But then now you guys need to get to work to win the championship.
Exactly. So the thing is, why do you want to make the team? Obviously, you make the team for, like, you know, the prestige of being on a U.S. team. But the real goal is, as the U.S. team member, you get to represent the U.S. in competition at the World Championships, which is also held every 2 years. And the World Championships, like, so just to clarify, like, what scale it is, obviously wushu is not like a huge sport in the North America, but it is recognized by the IOC, which is the International Olympic Committee. You know, over 88 signifying countries are a part of it. It's, you know, wushu is part of like the China Games, like the Southeast Asian Games, like, you know, Pan American Games. Like, it's a regulated body, and it's not just like a lot of people will kind of throw out like, oh, I won the martial arts 2015 championships, world championships, just because they'll say world championships because like someone from Russia and someone from Canada competed, so it was a world championships. People kind of do throw around the titles loosely, but this is kind of on a Olympic level scale that the International Olympic Committee recognizes and is the equivalent of the world championships for gymnastics, the world championships for like skating or any sports that set like the world records are set at the world championships for a lot of these sports. So anyways, like, so I, you know, all my coworkers are super happy for me, you know, because it's kind of like they knew that this was like a big thing for me. And I was pretty mentally exhausted because it was just very strenuous to like prepare for the U.S. trials. But now I had to prepare for world championships, and I continued what I was doing. And as it got closer, you know, my coworkers were saying things like, hey man, you gotta like go for the gold. You gotta, you know, like just kind of like, it's like a catch, you know, a phrase like go for the gold kind of thing. Right.
Yeah.
And no American wushu competitor had won a gold medal at the time, because it's a heavily dominated by Asia sport. Obviously I'm Asian American, but I'm born in America, you know? So like we represent the US in competition. And so no North American, or at least American competitor, probably North American, I think at the time, had ever won a gold medal in what I was doing.
Okay.
So really though, like it was more at the time, it was more of an honor to attend. It's kind of like, oh, I made it to the Olympics. You know, like you don't really think like, oh yeah, I'm going to, it's kind of like, oh, I'm not going to beat Mike Tyson or like Jordan or whoever. It's just like,
yeah,
cool. I got to play with them like on the court once. Like that's pretty life, you know, life story right there, you know?
Yeah.
But when people who weren't in my sport, they were just like, yeah, you're going to win, right? You go for the gold. It's just for some reason, it kind of triggered me at one point when someone said it to me, and I was like, oh dang, like I was going to do my best, which, you know, that's one mentality. I was going to kind of like, just let it be, which is a good mentality, you know, but I kind of zeroed in a little bit better when I went with specificity, like, okay, if I'm going to go, and it was so hard to just to get there that I'm probably only going to go. And I was later in my years already as a wushu athlete that I'm going to go once. So I'm like, okay, I need to go with the intent to win. And rather than just show up. I mean, still like do my best, you know, but it was a mentality thing, you know, like if you don't believe in yourself, genuinely, truly believe you're going to win, especially at a high level of competition, you're probably not going to, you know, if you're just like really talented and among your local community and you're like, oh, whatever. And you mail it in and you win. Hey, good for you. You know, but when you're at like the world stage and you don't even expect yourself to win, like, I don't think that you're going to win, you know what I mean? Competitively.
For sure. For sure. Yeah.
So yes, I went and, I kind of took that. Okay. So then I changed my perspective. Like, okay, I need to win. What do I have to do? What is like, you know, what are my strengths? Like I just kind of reevaluated, you know? And so at this point, I'll also fast forward again. And I made the decision. This is a once in a lifetime. It's like, it's literally nearly as significant as going to the Olympics. And if you had that opportunity, you would quit your job to try to win a gold medal at the Olympics, you know? So that yeah. this time it was like still tough, but it was the final nail in the coffin. It was like, I already made the US team. I'm going to like this world stage. So I kind of have to like make this decision, and I'll figure out my life like afterwards. It was just like big enough of a thing, you know? And so, yeah, so I decided actually with the help of my, my mom, she saw a sale on Southwest for like flights from LA back to like SF for like $39.99. So she was like, hey, I booked three of these flights for you, because she knew I was coming back to train.
Yeah.
I was like, you can't book these flights. Like I have work, like I have a limited amount of vacation days. Like, I can't just be flying back, you know? She had booked one too many discount flights for me.
Yeah.
That I was basically like, okay, I'm either going to have to like request vacation days that I don't have, or pretty much quit my job in order to make those flights. And so, yeah, I just like I just, my last day of work was the first day of the first Southwest flight back up north. So yeah, so I ended up just focusing everything, putting it all, focusing on competition, really, like I said, going for the gold, literally, and believing that.
I love that mentality. Yeah, I love that mentality. Not just showing up, but going for the gold. Seriously. Yeah.
And so when I got to the competition, here's one more thing. It's kind of like, if you say you genuinely believe in yourself and that you're going to go for the gold, your actions need to reflect that. So again, prior to the competition, prior to Worlds, my parents asked me like, oh, do you want us to attend? Because they had attended a lot of my tournaments when I was a kid. But, you know, later in life, they're like, dude, you should, what are you doing still doing wushu? You know, you got to like focus on your career and all this stuff. But they knew the World Championships was obviously like the biggest tournament of my life. So they kind of offhandedly, they just kind of like, oh, do you want us to go, you know, watch you compete or not? And at first I was like, no, like, don't worry about it. I don't want you guys to have to take vacation from your work. I don't want you guys to have to like book a flight to, it was in Canada. I don't want you to have to book a flight to Canada. Like, you know, it's a hassle to travel to get, you know, especially they have jobs as well. And you know, it's not easy just to get out of the house and all that. So I was like, you guys have seen me compete, you know, like since I was a kid. So I don't want to trouble you. But once I changed mentality of like, go for the gold, I thought to myself, okay, if I'm going to win a gold medal, the biggest achievement of my life, like who would you want to be there? Of course you'd want your parents to witness that. It's like, you want your parents to attend your graduation. There's certain, you know, that you're, if you get married, certain like, you know, momentous occasions, you want them to be there. So if I said, don't come, that's kind of going with the mentality of failure. Hey guys, forget it. I don't want you to see me just flop around and like do whatever. But if you look at it of like, I'm going to win the biggest event of my life, should your parents come? Yes or no? Like, it's a pretty simple answer. So pretty last minute, I was like, yes, yes. Like, please, you know, I'd love it if you guys could come. Luckily they were able to get time off. They were supportive. They came. And I'll tell you this, every single little bit of help helped me win that gold medal. Because what happened was, it came down to a tiebreaker. I was competing. So, you know, there's different events that we compete in, just like in Olympic stuff, but my category was in sword stuff, like straight sword. And when I competed, we have scoring and certain things. And my score, I had a tiebreaker between me and Japan. So it was literally, we were tied for first place. And it came, that's how close it came down to. Like, we had the exact same score, the exact same everything. And it came down to a tiebreaker. Like, the amount that my life has changed by being a world champion as opposed to being second place is definitely like, I don't know the exact extent, but I do know that when you are able to, especially now that I'm in entertainment, be a world champion and someone that's done something that America has never done versus being second place. I know that that's like a big difference, and it was made by Tiebreaker. So the fact that my parents were there, they were able to kind of, you know, just the comfort of them being there, they helped me, you know, kind of look over myself. I think my mom like helped me like get lunch or buy food, you know, like motherly things. All of my friends, even, you know, in LA, the ones that have just even helped me, like if I crashed at their place or if I was training, and yeah, I would train with them and then we would just like grab a bite and crash. Like anyone that helped me, like literally 1% of help that I, or 0.1% of help that I got from anyone made that difference. Cause any little mistake or one less, you know, being slightly more tired or whatever in that competition would have put me in second place. Like it couldn't be more dramatic than, like, it couldn't be more, you know, written like a movie than what really happened in real life.
Yeah.
You know,
that's crazy.
It came down to a freaking tiebreaker of me changing wushu history as the first American male to win a gold medal at the World Wushu Championships, which had never been done and has, I believe, to this day not been done in over like 30 something years. So like it, and same thing. That's why the mindset was important. If I was like, okay, I'll just do my best, I'll compete and just show up versus win, it was by tiebreaker, man. If I was just like, yeah, you know, Japan is really good, Hong Kong's really good, Vietnam, you know, all these Asian countries are really good, like how can I beat them? Even just like that expression in my eyes, in my face, like just any 1% would have put me second, third, fourth, fifth, you know, whatever. So that's how incredible that was really to me.
I love that you talk about mindset so much. I feel like that's so important. That's so incredibly important.
Yeah, no, absolutely. You know, it's how we, it's, you know, I believe in the law of attraction. You have to define what you want. You have to have gratitude for what you have. And then you need to believe in yourself and in achieving what you have defined, and both through your actions and through your words.
I love it. I love it, dude. No, seriously. I love that kind of shit. I'm serious.
Yeah,
I'm super into mindset. I'm really, really into mindset. I'm really into what we were talking about before. You were talking about not living day to day. I'm super into thinking long term, 10, 20, 30 years down the line. I think we've never talked this deeply about this kind of thing, but I'm super into that kind of stuff.
And I know I vibed it and I sensed it like just in your posts and in the things that you've been putting out there. And I was like, I really like what you're doing with the podcast, with gathering people in the community. And it's you know, it's the law of attraction. I don't want to get all too, you know, into that side of things necessarily, but you could feel it when someone thinks that way. They think bigger picture, they think long term. I'm super into that stuff as well. And it's obviously gotten us to where we are today.
For sure, for sure. Okay, so you win the championship and then this starts opening up tons of doors for you. So where do you go next after that?
Yeah, so I go back to the US. I'm freaking unstoppable. Like, you know, just like I just
conquered. You won the gold medal. You won the gold medal. Yeah. You must feel so good.
Yeah, it's like I won a world championship, you know. And so I was definitely just feeling high on life and was getting a few, you know, interviews and I was on a couple magazines for, you know, more in the martial arts community. And just like at this point, I also didn't have a job, like a full-time job anymore, because I had quit to compete. And was just like, I was on cloud nine. And I guess the momentum kind of just continued. And I wanted to, there's a part of me which I'm a little bit jumping ahead, but it's like, I wanted to live my life in a way where I could be talking with someone like you or be sharing with someone that, like, I wanted to like stamp in that and be an example that if you, you know, if you believe in something and that you really do this like law of attraction thing with your mindset and all that, that like the craziest things are possible, you know? And so I won the world championships, but in wushu, no buts, but you know, in wushu. However, I felt like that wasn't enough to like make the biography on Alfred Tsering. You know what I mean? So
yes,
to stamp in, people be like, oh, well, yeah, you trained, you're an athlete, you trained hard. So like you got there, you know, like doesn't mean anyone can do it, you know? And like, so I wanted to live by example, and the next steps of my life, I had set these new goals, which were even crazier and more like ridiculous. And those goals were working with my two biggest idols, which was Jackie Chan and Jet Li, and then appearing in a Hollywood blockbuster film. Those were like my new world championship goals. And
how do you come up with those goals? Like, do you like sit down and like journal about them, or did they just kind of like pop up in your head and you just think, this is like what I want to do?
I just go off of, well, I'm roughly saying this, but yeah, I go off of my gut. You know, some people, they don't have maybe a strong call, but if you explore enough, do enough things and kind of find yourself, you'll be able to see what things you are attracted to. And I, you know, I'm more fortunate in that, like, I just knew, like, I didn't strategically plan out like, oh, how am I going to make a living or how am I going to do these things? It was like one milestone after another, which was the world championships thing was like a no brainer. Like, I don't know, I just always wanted to do that. I've been doing martial arts for a long time, and everything was building up towards that. After that, it was kind of like, well, what else do I really just want to do? And the people that got me into martial arts, even though they didn't know me, but I knew them, was, you know, watching all these martial arts movies. And the two biggest influences were Jackie Chan and Jet Li. So I'm like, well, can I get close to these guys and work with them and somehow maybe contribute back to them? I don't know. Like, that's just what I would want to do. Like, I didn't really think about the money play or like, because really, like, what do we really need money for? It's just it's a means to an end. It's a means to do what we want. So what if I just do what I want without thinking about the money? If my goal is like, oh, I want to drive a Ferrari, I should think about how I can drive a Ferrari, not how I can make $1 million and then buy one and then do this. It's like, what do I want to do?
I love it. Okay. So those are your goals. So what's the next step?
So yeah, so those became my goals. And shortly after, you know, because it's kind of like you need to put yourself in a position to receive these, you need to put yourself in a position to receive the things that you want to attract. And so because I didn't have a job anymore, one of my friends who was, he did Wushu, and he was also a web designer for Jet Li's website. And so he was in touch with Jet Li, and he knew I was jobless. And he said, hey, I overheard that Jet is looking for someone to help him out, because his current team, you know, assistant or whatnot, is going to get an MBA. So he's looking for someone international with experience in martial arts, a little bit of interest in the entertainment space, bilingual, and has like a business background, because Jet Li had transcended being just an actor. He had a philanthropy, he has his own businesses, real estate is, you know, like he's more than just an actor, you know, and a global ambassador for many brands and many organizations. So he wanted someone a little bit with just a crazy random background, and I happened to like fit that, you know.
Wow, that is crazy. That's so awesome. Okay.
That wouldn't have happened. This opportunity would not have come up if I hadn't quit my job and opened myself up for that opportunity, you know? Yeah. So I basically send in my stuff, just like a little cover letter and a resume and, you know, a little self-introduction kind of thing. And I don't hear anything back. I go on my merry way. I'm like, I'm going to be real. I'm still like partying with my friends. I'm still like getting involved, you know, just like I'm living the high life. You know, I just like, everyone was like very congratulatory and like, you know, great job on like, you know, you like conquered the impossible, you know, especially in my communities. And people were just like so proud. And I was like, I was just living it up, because it's like, this is something I had trained for the past 10 years and given myself so much pressure. And so I wake up one day to a phone call, and it's like +67 12 X9, you know, whatever. It's just like some weird number, and I'm about to like hit like end, you know, because, and I'm waking up at like 8 a.m. I'm about to like hit end on this number.
Yeah.
And you know, something in me is like, well, whatever, like, I'll just pick it up. If it's spam, then I'll just like tell them to like get out of here or whatever, you know? So I pick it up and it's like, hi, I'm calling from the office of Jet Li. I received your information, and your, as a referral, are you, you know, as a candidate for this position. I'm literally like, I've got like eye boogers. Like I'm in my, like, I'm sleeping. Yeah. So anyways, so yeah, I take the call and he's like, okay. Yeah. So could we schedule a time to Skype? Because, you know, there, yeah. So the reason the number obviously was all well funky was he was calling internationally. He was, yes, like Singapore or Hong Kong, you know, and different time zones. So, I know we're Skyping right now, but, I had hair at the time. So I had this crazy like bed head and like bed hair and just like looking like a mess. So he asks me like, do I have time for, you know, an interview? And I was, you know, I was like, I was going to say, yeah, you know, let's try to do later today or, you know, reschedule to not reschedule, but just cause he called me out of the blue. So I was like, okay, yeah, we can schedule a time, you know, but something in me was like, this is again, just like the type of person that I am. It's like this whole time is valuable. You got to seize opportunities kind of thing. I was like, and also I thought in my, I did the quick calculation that like, he's on a different time zone. Like it's going to be hard to like connect again. He's got to like find me, you know? I was like, here's my Skype. Like if you have time, like, why don't we just do it now? I think he might've even asked me if I was free now. And I was like, I was going to say no, because I looked like crap.
Yeah.
But I was like, you know what? Like, let's do this.
Okay.
So yeah, I gave him my Skype. He's like, I'll call you right now. I was like, okay. So in the time I hung up the phone to pick up the Skype, like I ran and like put on some clothes. I kind of like mashed down my hair a little bit. And he calls me, I press accept, like the camera turns on. He like looks at me for a second. He's kind of like, he does a little like, and he's like, anyways, so he kind of like gets serious, you know?
Yeah.
And yeah, we do the interview there, you know, it's just standard kind of interview questions and all that. And once again, you know, I finished the interview, and I don't hear back for like maybe like 2 or 3 weeks.
How'd you feel about the interview?
It was all very surreal. You know, it's just like, there's a guy that's, you know, that's the gatekeeper of Jet Li. He's in like Asia Skyping me. I never met him at the time. I was just like, I still was like, is this even real? Like, and even if it is, I was like, what are the odds? Like, it is very like one in a million that like, oh yeah, sure, I'm going to fly out and be like Jet Li's main guy for the next couple of years
for sure,
and learn from him and do all these things. Like, come on. You know, like I saw this guy in a movie. I'm like, not millions, but I'm like, thousands of miles away.
Yeah.
It's not really something that I thought was like a real thing. I went through it, you know, I still did it. And obviously again, believe in myself in it, but it was just like, okay, I'm going to just go through the motions. But
then after the interview, like, did you feel like it was like a really good interview? Like, do you feel like you crushed it or did you feel like, it was just okay?
No, I felt pretty good. I think, I was always a guy that did pretty decent in interviews. And also, like, you know, I think the interviewing experience of at KPMG and like all that stuff, it still helped, even though they're
complete for sure
jobs. But like, there is a skill to interviewing, you know, how to present yourself and all that.
That's a good point.
So, I think you know, I think in some ways, I wouldn't say like, I think my confidence in even having just like this crazy bed hair and just like waking up. I mean, he understood that like it was a different time zone, like out here and stuff like that. I think that probably worked in my favor of just like, okay, this guy's on the ball. He's ready to go. It's not like,
I love it.
Take like another, like, you know, 2 days to get back to you kind of thing.
Okay.
So I'm out in Hollywood with my friend, Wei, and I think he's driving, and we had a drink or two. We're about to go to, you know, an event, and I check my phone, I check the mail, I reload it. And then it says like, offer letter from the office of Jet Li. And I'm like, Wei, I just got a job offer to work for Jet Li. I looked at it. It's a real thing, you know? And I kind of just went numb a little bit there. And I was like, again, one of those things, like, is this real? And it was.
Wow.
Yeah. And it was. And I had 2 weeks to pack up everything and move to China. Like, it wasn't like I was just going to work, you know, a couple of days. I literally had to prepare to pack up my life in America, cancel all my, you know, gym membership, all my subscriptions, all my bills, all whatever, pack everything up and relocate my life to China, basically, in 2 weeks.
That's crazy, dude. Okay.
Yeah. So, you know, obviously I also tell my parents who were once very traditional Chinese parents, which they were like, you know, you got the finance job, you got to, you know, do either business or law, you know, like these kind of things. You got to stick with what's tried and true, to all of a sudden being mind blasted. Like, okay, my son just won the world championships. I've seen him appear on a few, you know, random stunt or random gigs on television. Now he got a job offer from Jet Li, who they had seen in theaters in Asia and on TV. And they're just kind of like, all right, we're not going to like exactly tell you what to do anymore at this point.
Yeah.
Just like, this is like some freak of nature, like stuff happening.
Wow. That's crazy, man. Okay. So 2 weeks, you have 2 weeks and then you move over to China. What is that like? What is that like?
I'm obviously like, just luckily I'm a spontaneous type. So I was able to, you know, go with the flow. And yeah, I just, like I said, I totally just scrambled and made it happen. So I move out to China. When I first get out there, basically, like I still hadn't, I may have met Jet like once, like long ago, but essentially for this, you know, cause it was over Skype type interview with his assistant and not himself. So, I was kind of still like, what is happening? Like I was just, I still didn't believe it. You know, there's a sketch part of me that was like, even though it was like through my friend who worked for him. So I believed it all, but just part of me, because it was so surreal. I was like, am I flying to China and then I'm going to get my organs harvested? Like I was just like, you know, like, cause when I landed, just someone had a sign and they picked me up. I didn't know anything, like, you know, as in like, I didn't recognize them. I didn't know them personally. And I hadn't seen Jet Li appear yet, cause he was actually not even in, I flew to Beijing, but he wasn't even in Beijing yet, cause he was still on some other tour, you know, crazy life. And so I'm just kind of waiting in like this hotel for like a week before he gets there. So this whole time I'm like, are they going to foot me with this like crazy hotel bill and just like tell me like get back to LA, or like they're going to be like, this is a mistake, or like, I don't know, you know, just like, it's the same thing. I was just like, when you put a lot of importance on something, you just, your mind starts running and thinking of like all the alternate possibilities, you know? So anyways, he actually comes and it is real. And I end up working for him for, you know, like a year and a half or I mean, it's the job kind of like, I was still helping him out like even later on, but for definitely over a year I was working with him. Crazy lifestyle. I mean, this, I could do a whole story on this alone, you know, but I'll just kind of give you just some highlights. But like the first week of working with him, I think I had flown to six different, you know, countries or provinces or whatever in 5 days. We were on like tours, and I woke up in a hotel one day and I didn't know where I was. I thought I was still in America for some reason, because it was a whirlwind of a trip. And then I realized like, oh wait, I'm in Shanghai. You know, it's just like, it was like super crazy. Like, yeah, there's so many other stories that I kind of don't want to like just spend all the time on that. But essentially, like, it was really crazy and it was a blessing. And I mean, I don't want to say it was definitely not all just like rainbows and candy canes, you know, like kind of fun.
It's a job, you know? Yeah, it's a job. So there's a lot of work.
Super, super hardcore, like hours. My life was like the Devil Wears Prada in terms of like intensity. Okay. Like going here, he's like the elite of, as a superstar, but also as a martial artist and also as a, like a representative kind of China. So like, it's just like a lot of, I interacted with Bill Gates, Bill Clinton, like I interacted with Jack Ma of Alibaba, with the CEOs of all the major studios, all the film studios in China. I had, you know, lunches and stuff with like Rob Cohen, who did like The Mummy and like the Bruce Lee, Dragon the Bruce Lee story. And like his, Jet Li's agents and managers in the US are like communicating with me. And they're also Jason Statham's manager. I mean, it's like big people and just big things happening left and right, you know. Like, yeah, one day I wake up to an email from like Bill Gates Foundation, you know, the next day I'm like on set, like kind of doing like martial arts moves with Jet Li or whatever, you know. And I do see why he wanted someone with like kind of like a jack of all trades in some ways, or at least in certain fields. Let's say he tested me as well, and he kind of like worked me up two things. But in the end, I was okay. Like, I'll be honest. I was like making coffee and tea for him, ordering food for him, booking flights for him, but also negotiating multi-million dollar commercial contracts for him. I was also, I stunt doubled him on a commercial, and I also oversaw some of the action stuff that he did on like 30 plus million dollar feature films that were like hits in China. And I was interacting with all the other A-list stars in China. Like, it was definitely like a crazy ride that, like, because my things have been moving so fast ever since I kind of moved on from that, because maybe if we have time, we'll get to it. But I started to do like stunts and action coordinating on my own, that things have just kept on moving fast. But like, it is nice because I haven't had a time to really like tell all of these stories in their entirety. And it was almost like when I came back to the US, it was almost like a new chapter. So definitely people knew I worked for him, but like few people have heard and gone in depth on like all of the stories. And like if I could do one of these like telepathic things and like touch your brain and just like flood you with all of my knowledge, like you would be like blacked out for like, 48 hours.
No, that sounds amazing. That sounds like such a crazy opportunity. And it sounds like you met so many great people, did a lot of cool things. So did you have a lot of interaction with Jet Li? Like, were there any big lessons that you learned from him or anything that you took away from him?
Oh, no, I lived with the guy. Like, I lived in his house. Yeah. He's like, yeah, I lived with him. And I saw him, like, you know, I saw him more than, like, someone I'm in a relationship with or something like that. Like, it's like, I literally saw him every waking hour, except for maybe if I took a holiday to see my parents, like, once every year, you know?
Okay.
I spent, like, Christmas and, like, you know, birthdays and stuff with him just because, like, the job was so demanding, you know?
Yeah. So what are lessons that you learned from Jet Li?
I would say, like, I mean, some of the greatest lessons is just, you know, he is, it doesn't matter where you are in life and what level of success, like if you just, he is always on it. Like he's punctual, he's sharp. He doesn't take anything lightly, even despite like where he is. And I would also say that through my interactions with Jack Ma, Jet Li, and all these people, that, man, people think that if they have $1 billion or a shit ton of money, that like it's going to change their lives. I could say, like, I was with the wealthiest people in China, which I mean, I don't know where Jack Ma ranks or whatever, but they are just living the lives everyone has. Obviously, they have more, you know, material things, and some things, yes, are easier, but they have the same issues, you know, like family things, or just like, you know, running to juggling like different life choices, or kind of like competing with their friends, like, you know, not necessarily in a bad way, but like, oh damn, I see that so-and-so is doing well. Like, where am I? Like, kind of the same insecurities and stuff. And like, it's just on a different scale. You know, it's like I'm not saying you personally, but you're seeing this other entrepreneur's, like, his product is like better than yours. And like, you want to match it. Well, hey, these guys are doing like $50 million movies, but like, oh shoot, Jackie Chan just came out with a $60 million movie. You know, it's like, it's the same thing. You think that like, oh, if, well, not you, but many people think like, if I just get to this certain place, like I want to be coasting, you know? And
for sure,
it's not the case. You're still going to have to deal with like plumbers to come to your house, even if it's a mansion. You're going to still have to deal with like, or you're going to still have to deal with hiring a guy to hire a guy. You know, like, there is just still like these issues. And yeah, if you organize and do certain things, no doubt, you can obviously make things like easier on yourself and optimize, but like, we all still age. We still all go to the doctor. We still, like, they're so similar. Like, for me, I wasn't like putting these guys on a pedestal, obviously, because I was living with them, working with them day to day, but like they're just like you, man. If anything, you have more knowledge than they do in certain things, you know, in certain things where you've educated yourself. And so like, they're all just people. They all have things that they're like excited about too. Like, even though they're like at the top of the food chain in some capacities, they're like, oh, whoa, that was cool. I want to like go watch this event. Or like, you know, they see things online too, on YouTube, or like, oh, that's dope. Or like Youku in China, whatever. But
yeah,
anyway, so it's kind of like that. That's something that I also learned, that it's like, it's pretty important actually to like find some kind of spiritual path it doesn't have to be necessarily religious or whatever, but just like grounding yourself, looking at the bigger picture. I think those things put things in perspective a lot better and are a lot more useful than like, again, the day-to-day stuff and like just living in the, as like an instinctual creature.
I think that's a really important lesson. Yeah, that's so true. And I feel like that's very similar to thinking like, I'll be happy when, you know, like people like have this goal, like, oh, they want to make like $10 million, $20 million. And they think that exactly what you said, they get to that goal and then they'll be coasting. But then exactly what you said, when you get there, you look at your peers and they have more money and then you want more and more.
Yep.
So I feel that's like such an important lesson. How about from Jackie Chan? Is that also kind of a similar lesson you learned from Jackie Chan, or were there some other things you learned from Jackie?
Yeah. So, speaking of Jackie, he was basically kind of like phase two of my like goals and stuff like that. I'd worked for Jet. I'd met Jackie a couple of times, but eventually I decided to go on my own path because, you know, I always wanted to continue working in films. And at that time, Jet was a little bit more focused on philanthropy and kind of like just doing, you know, nonprofits and certain business endeavors. He was focusing more on business and he wanted me to kind of join his company, Tai Chi Zen, which is what it was called. I had a hand in some early stage stuff with just kind of outlining and setting up the company, very, very early stage. And I didn't want to go, even though I was working for Jet Li, but I didn't want to go back to the corporate structure, which was like what was going to be required. And we had leased like a new office and all these things. I just would have been working corporate life in China. You know, it's a startup corporate life, you know, but for me, it was entertainment was kind of where I wanted to go next. I wouldn't say it's my final stage, but it's where I wanted to go next. So anyway, so I was able to get involved in like the movie scene out in China and through just various interactions and friends out there, I was introduced to the stunt coordinator for one of Jackie Chan's stunt coordinators, who then brought me on to the Jackie Chan stunt team. And so that was like phase two, crazy, crazy, like world championships, worked and lived with Jet Li, and now like inducted where Jackie Chan himself, it was this movie called Dragon Blade. He came up to me and introduced me to like some of the older stunt guys, like, hey, this is the new generation, like Jackie Chan stunt team, like Alfred. I was like in tears inside, you know, that
Holy
was
shit.
Crazy. This American born kid from California somehow ended up in Asia working with Jackie mother effing Chan, and where he knew my name and introduced me, you know, as a stunt team member of his, like to like legendary other stunt people. And I was like, my mind was blown, you know, I was like, this is it. This is like, you can do anything. You know what I mean? Like, that's crazy. Like just by, you know, believing and putting yourself out there, like the path is not clear, but you just take one step at a time until you get closer and closer, you know?
Yeah.
It's kind of like World of Warcraft, you know, the map is like black, but when you keep walking, it keeps on opening up the map. That's like what happens, you know?
So what's Jackie Chan like?
So Jackie Chan is awesome. Basically, like, he's the most personable guy ever. And humility is just through the roof. First of all, yeah, Jackie Chan is exactly how you would think Jackie Chan is, like how you see him in the outtakes and all that. Like, and when you see him in the movies, like, he's basically just Jackie Chan. Like, probably, like, all of his characters should just be named Jackie, like, in all his movies. You know, like, he's literally himself. I mean, there's obviously, like, sometimes where, you know, he might play, like, a Vietnamese soldier or, like, in the foreigner or, like, a certain thing, you know. But essentially, yeah, he's very much playing himself. But he's really cool in a different way. Like, he loves movies. Like, he loves the community. He's a very social person. He loves learning. I feel like, yeah, he's got he's a kid at heart. He's like, he's getting up there in age, but he's just a kid at heart. He's got a ton of energy. And yeah, I would say, I think what keeps him young and why he's just so badass is like, he never stops learning. he's got this genuine curiosity for all things. This is like crazy that I'm saying all this stuff, but I was able to fly on a private jet with Jackie and his manager. We flew from Beijing to Hong Kong. We get in at like close to midnight. He goes to his house in Hong Kong. He gets a haircut, like from a personal like stylist at like midnight in his kitchen while he's like on the phone, like doing other like deals and talking and stuff like that. Then he's like, he doesn't want to sleep still. So he just takes me. I'm like one of the only guys there. He has like two or three, maybe assistants, you know, and we go to his like study room or something, which is a huge room, the size of like a TV studio. I think he bought out like a former network station studio, and it was just one of the rooms. And he starts like showing me everything in there. This is like midnight. Wow,
that's unreal. Like,
yeah, it's just me and him, like two assistants and like a manager who's obviously been there many times. So she's kind of just like chilling, but he's like, and obviously he, you know, I'm not trying to front. Like obviously he knows me from we worked together on the movie for like, you know, 3 or 4 months. But, you know, I'm not like his BFF or anything like that. It's just like, I'm one of the stunt guys that he's worked with. And he's just like, I think it could have been like, you could have been there. He would have been excited to like share with you like what was going on. He takes me to this room or like the, you know, this kind of like work study area. He like blasts some like 70s music or something like on his like Bang & Olufsen like system or something. And then he's just showing me everything. He's got like this old like Coke machine that like he's like he puts in a nickel and he's this like Coke bottle comes out and he's like, look, it's real cane sugar, you know, it's like a real like thing from like, you know, like the '50s, one of those like, you know. And then he like brings me to this other area and he turns on this huge light. Imagine like a dentist light, you know, but like overhead, but a huge one.
Yeah. Okay.
He turns it on. He's like, he waves his hands. He's like, look, no shadows. Like, they made that for surgery, you know? It's this huge light. I'm like, what? Why is this in the house? He's like, look, no shadows.
Oh, man. That's so funny.
He takes me to this other bookshelf. He like hits this book. It opens. He's like, look, it's my private theater. I walk in. He's like, okay, let's go. He like pushes me out. Like he just shows me. The bookshelf like closes. Like, tell me that's not like, if you had like unlimited resources and money, you would make like a bat cave and like do crazy stuff, you know?
Damn, that's crazy, man. I'm sure you have so many Jackie Chan and Jet Li stories.
Oh yeah, no, so many. So yeah. Just to finish that story off, so then we end up sitting down on this on the counter. He busts out some like Cavassier or XO or something like that, and Jackie Chan brand cigar, and we just share. He gives me a cigar. We basically like we're just chilling with a cigar, listening to like 70s or 80s music on his like stereo system, and he's just like telling me stories. That was like one of the best days of my life.
Bro, that is amazing. That's so crazy, man.
Yeah.
We're going to have to do a part two on your Hollywood career, but I think this is pretty good for now. Do you have any parting thoughts for the young guys?
Yeah, well, I definitely, I'm going to recap some of those things, but that is a good, you know, I guess stopping point. But I felt like those were the things that I was like, I wanted to do it for myself, of course, but I also wanted to be an example that like, I wanted to do the most unbelievable, ridiculous things that wasn't necessarily for my career or for money or whatever. It was just like something that I wanted to do. And the fact that I was able to be the first, you know, doing what I did, made the US team, hit the world championships, worked for Jet Li, worked for him, and was able to be called, you know, by Jackie Chan, a member of the Jackie Chan stunt team, and have him know me on a first name basis, like, those are seemingly like not necessarily connected and seemingly impossible things, but I was able to do them because of like this ridiculous power of belief, and not just belief, but kind of genuinely believing, but putting in the work through your actions. Like if you believe it's going to happen, you have to be making the motions. You don't just sit on the couch, because then that's not outwardly showing how much you want it. If you really wanted something, you're going to do everything in your ability to go get it, you know? And so I guess my parting words for today, it's actually something about the stresses that we put on ourselves, you know? And I, took me a while, you know, especially in like Hollywood, which we didn't really get into this time. But it's like, I do go from job to job, like film to film or project to project. And like, it can be stressful to be like, oh, can I get on, you know, this next thing? You're competing with people. Like there's just like a lot of stress. And with anyone who wants like a career advancement or maybe to like take their business to the next level, like there is always this kind of stress. But I think I'm moving to a place where I'm able to find like this Zen point. And what I mean by that, stress is pretty much, it's not productive. So what I mean by that is like, you either do your best and let the rest be what it will. Like you've genuinely done your best. You have no regrets. You put in the hard work. You did the research. You know, you took the risks, whatever. So at that point, there's nothing to stress about because you cannot physically do anything more. On the converse end, if you didn't do your best or you decided to take a rest day, like that was a choice. So there's also nothing to stress about. Like you decided to not work your hardest or whatever, which is also fine. Like you wanted to chill, like, or go on vacation. Well, shit, enjoy your vacation. It's like either or, like you've already done your best, so there's nothing else you can do. So stressing is not going to help. And if you've made a choice to like, kind of whatever, like enjoy or spend time with loved ones or do stuff that's not pushing you forward, but those are all choices that you made, you should enjoy them. It's kind of like the worst thing. Like if you order dessert and you still eat it, but you're just guilty and you're not really enjoying it. It's like you got the carbs and the calories, but you didn't enjoy the dessert. So what I'm saying is like, at this point for me, like when I'm trying to get, a stunt job or a new project, I do my best. I hustle, I train, I learn, I do everything I can. But if it goes to someone else, it's like, there's really nothing else like for me to stress about, you know? So that's kind of the mentality I'm trying to, or I feel that I'm moving towards. And I think that's helpful for many people because stress is just going to set you back. So even from just an efficiency standpoint, like I would try to like use that mentality and you'll put yourself in a better like mental state and a flow state.
For sure, man.
Yeah.
Bro, this conversation has been awesome. No, seriously, I know that you probably have so many Hollywood stories and stuff like that, but I want to be respectful of your time. I also learned a lot about you and then also just like kind of the lessons that you are imparting. Like I'm thinking a lot about that. So Alfred, it's been awesome, dude.
Cool. No, thank you for having this platform and thank you for having me on here.
Yo. Okay. So that was my interview with Alfred. What'd you guys think? Hope you guys really liked it and felt inspired. I certainly did. If you guys really enjoyed it, please share and subscribe. Leave a 5-star review. That'd be really awesome. And also check out my Facebook group and apply to join. Thanks again, guys. And I'll see you guys next week.